Hello, I'm Gregory Novak. This is The Cunning of Geist, episode 81. Welcome back. The purpose of this podcast is to explore philosophy, psychology, and modern science with an emphasis on the great 19th century philosopher George Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel. I also cover other great thinkers here, such as psychologist Carl Jung, media theorist Marshall McLuhan, and many more, all of whom I believe can provide help to us today in understanding our place in the world and then setting meaningful goals and taking appropriate actions to build a better life for us and for everyone. Before we get into this episode, I want to mention that I realize it's been 7 weeks since I last published an episode. And when I started the podcast some 4 years ago, I began by doing them every 2 weeks, very religiously. Then after a year or so, I moved to every 3 weeks. Then after another year or so to about once a month. And I continued that just up until now. And as I've mentioned before, I feel that I really need to have something to say that is new and different to record an episode. I just can't force it. I don't want to just come on here and babble and waste your time. But I do believe that I've come up with a new topic and I'm excited to present it here now. So here we go. In this episode, I'm going to move beyond the confines of planet Earth and look at the larger universe as a whole, to get the bigger physical picture, if you will. There is so much we know about the cosmos today that was unavailable to Hegel and other thinkers, even to those philosophers and psychologists in the 20th century. The questions I will be addressing are these. First, one, does life exist elsewhere in the universe? Two, if so, does intelligent life, rationality, exist elsewhere in the universe? Three, if intelligent life does exist elsewhere, is it possible for us to communicate with extraterrestrial consciousness? And four, lastly, if extraterrestrial consciousness exists beyond our planet, why have we not heard from them? So, as regular listeners know, I normally begin an episode by stating my overall conclusions first, then backing up and presenting my full argument, and then summarizing. But given the uniqueness of this topic, I believe it's best to get into some of the details first, then present my conclusions. So, let's start. Question one, does life exist elsewhere in the universe? Well, let's break this question down. First, we do know that life exists here on planet Earth, so we know it's possible for life to originate in the universe. We also know that rational conscious thought here exists here as well, so it's possible for rational consciousness to exist in the universe. And whether or not that is the aim of the universe is a separate question, which I'll put on hold for now and revisit later. But let's step back and examine what we know about life appearing here on Earth. And right off the bat, we are faced with a big question. Do we have the right to say that life began to exist here? I only bring this up because there is a serious theory called panpsychism. We devoted an entire episode to that back in episode 12. Panpsychism holds that mind exists as a fundamental feature of the cosmos, of everything, even of matter. There's no particle or speck of dust or subatomic particle that does not contain some very rudimentary form of mind. If that's correct, then mind may have been operating, even in a rudimentary form, mind and life, from the so-called beginning of our universe. But this brings up a question. From the beginning of our universe, did our universe have a beginning? I've covered my thinking on this question back in episode 39, but let's review what I have to say on this. Scientists now consider the notion of the Big Bang as being established fact, that this occurred some 13.8 billion years ago. And just what was going on at that moment and what preceded it is unknown. My own theory, similar to what is taught in Hinduism and other traditions teach, is that the universe goes through cycles. From the Big Bang, the universe continues to expand to the point where everything is so far apart, it eventually dissolves, and then a new universe is reborn from this cosmic quagmire of nothingness, if you will, into another Big Bang. Now, this is not eternal recurrence. It's not the same things repeat over and over again in each round, a la Nietzsche. But the universe itself can evolve, I believe, and others believe, including its laws from round to round. And I covered this theory in detail in a full episode, episode 61, so check that out. Now, How did scientists conclude that the Big Bang occurred? Well, this is interesting. They discovered that the galaxies that we now observe are moving away from each other at an accelerated rate. They use this fact to project backward in time and realize that the universe had to have a much smaller beginning. It must have been much smaller earlier on than it is today. And actually, it keeps, if you go backwards, it keeps getting smaller and smaller to the original Big Bang, some 13.8 billion years ago. As I said, what exactly went down there, they don't know. That's because the laws of physics break down in these initial conditions. But it appears that there was initially something that existed on a quantum level. And scientists determined that right before the Big Bang, there was a huge expansion of space itself. Now, what's important here is the universe did not expand into space. It was space itself that expanded. I know it's impossible to visualize this because if something is expanding, then it must be expanding into something. Now, scientists use the concept of blowing up a balloon with dots on it to explain this. As the balloon gets bigger, the dots move away from each other. That is the best current science can do as an explanation, and it's not perfect by any stretch because the balloon obviously is expanding into the air around it. But let's just leave that conundrum here and just say that scientists using relativity theory, Einstein, space-time continuum, etc., believe this is what's occurring based on current knowledge. Now, after this initial extreme expansion of space, there was just a kind of cosmic radiation that existed. And it existed like this for some 400 million years. And then the first stars finally appeared. So the cosmic background radiation is still detectable today, in fact. And it actually is what's provided further evidence to support the Big Bang theory. So the expanding universe is what gave empirical evidence to the original Big Bang. But we're talking here about galaxies and stuff. Let's just back up for a second and review some basics about our universe from a physical standpoint. We live on the planet Earth. It's a round blue ball. We've all seen the photographs of it from space. We live on this planet. And the planet Earth travels around in a circle around the sun. The sun is that big, bright object in the sky that you can't look at directly. It takes 1 year for the Earth, our planet, to make the circular journey around the sun. In fact, this is how we define the term 1 year, how long it takes the Earth to go one revolution around the sun. Now, there are seven other planets that also revolve around the sun. They're different sizes and makeups. Earth is the third one out. Scientists used to consider Pluto, which is the outermost protoplanet, they used to consider that an actual planet, but they no longer classify it as a full-fledged planet. So our sun now is just one sun of about 100 billion stars that make up our Milky Way galaxy. Sometimes you can see this at night, the Milky Way galaxy. It consists of 100 billion stars, and we're one of the stars with our eight planets. Now, that's a lot of stars. And coincidentally, the human brain, they estimate, has approximately 100 billion neurons, roughly the same number of stars as in the Milky Way galaxy. Now, what's fascinating here is the Milky Way galaxy, our galaxy, is just one such star cluster of an estimated 200 billion to 2 trillion galaxies in the entire universe. Now, we're getting into numbers that you cannot visualize. To calculate the total number of stars in the universe, one would have to multiply 100 billion stars from one galaxy times the number of galaxies, say 1 trillion, and I don't think my calculator can handle that many zeros. Now, these first stars or suns appearing some 13.4 roughly billion years ago, 400 million years after the Big Bang, not all the stars were formed then. Stars continue to be born and go through a life cycle. Some were formed then and some were formed after, including our own sun. And stars die out also. It depends on the size of the star, but they can live from some 20 million years on the short side to several trillion years on the long side. Our own sun is estimated to have a lifespan of some 10 billion years. So it is possible that some of the first stars in the universe may still be around. Now, our sun was born about 4.6 billion years ago, so it's a relatively new star, and it will continue to live for another 5.4 billion years or so. The Earth itself is almost as old as the sun, being born 4.5 billion years ago. And it and the other planets were formed at roughly the same time, very early in the sun's life. So that's where we stand on the cosmic timetable, and it gives you some perspective. Now, let's go back to the question of life. Scientists contend that the first physical evidence of anything that could be called life, which is microscopic microbes, appeared some 3.7 billion years ago on the planet. So the physical appearance of life on Earth appeared relatively early in the Earth's history. So just over 80% of the Earth's life so far has contained observable physical life. Now, from the appearance of these first singular cell microbes, it took another 2 to 3 billion years, that's a lot of time, for multicellular life to evolve, where the cells joined up. Some, one cell might eat another one, and or they would combine somehow, and they then formed a new entity, a multicellular organism. Then it took another 800 million years, almost another billion years, for multiple forms of life, plants and animals, to evolve. Then around 538 million years ago, the so-called Cambrian explosion occurred. And this was a great evolutionary leap in that many early primitive life forms emerged back then, about a half a billion years ago. Now, fish continued to evolve during this period, and the first ones that moved out of the water to the land did so around 390 million years ago. Mammals appeared around 200 million years ago. It took some time for the initial primates, our direct ancestors, to evolve. This occurred around 50 to 55 million years ago. Early humanoids evolved some 5 to 6 million years ago from a common ancestor of the ape. And at that time, there were many different humanoid species evolving separately, perhaps as many as 15 to 20 different types. Modern humans, speaking of our form, our bodies, first appeared around 300 million years ago. And certain cultural developments like tools, cave art, and such, that's much more recent. And that started about 50,000 to 65,000 years ago. So we're moving forward here. The agricultural revolution then occurred around 10,000 years ago when people changed from hunter-gatherers to living in more stable communities. Writing, which is so important, began more recently around 3200 BCE in Mesopotamia. And this is very close to when writing was formed in Egypt, around 3100 BCE. Hinduism, the world's oldest religion, appeared 2000 BCE. Judaism, around 1000 BCE. Christianity, around 33 CE with the death of Jesus. Continuing to move forward, the printing press was invented in 1440. The scientific revolution occurred in the 16th and 17th century, along with the Protestantism of Martin Luther. The great liberal revolutions in Europe and America began in the late 17th and early 18th century. The philosophical revolution of Kant and Hegel occurred during that time. The electrical revolution took hold in the late 1800s, beginning with the telegraph leading to the radio, then television in the 20th century. The first flight occurred early in the 20th century, and the first man on the moon was in 1969, and the internet late in the 20th century. All very recent, given the fact that observable life on Earth goes back 3.7 billion years. And the most major developments occurred in just the last few thousand years. So it's just a tiny fraction of the total time of physical life on the planet. So what am I getting at here? Life, whether it was also there in a protoform before that, in, as in panpsychism, or if it began to exist at that time, is nearly as old as the planet itself. But it took almost this entire time for it to evolve where we are today, thinking, conscious creatures. Now, given that fact, though, there are stars in the universe that have been around much longer than our sun, maybe even twice as long. And scientists estimate there are some 200 billion stars like our sun just in our own Milky Way galaxy alone, 200 billion stars like our sun in our own galaxy. And they estimate that some 20% of those stars have planets. 20% of the stars that are like our sun have planets. That's 40 billion stars like ours in our galaxy with planets orbiting around them. And they also estimate that there are more than 2 billion planets in our galaxy that could sustain life because they are in a habitable zone from their mother star. So that's 2 billion planets, you know, so we're saying that if life only evolved here, that'd be 1 out of 2 billion. That's pretty low odds. So to answer the first question, whether life exists on other planets, twofold answer. It's certainly possible, and it looks like it would be highly likely given the vast number of planets that exist out there, like ours. However, we've seen no evidence of such life, and this is a paradox. So we cannot really categorically say yes or no to question one without direct evidence of extraterrestrial intelligent life. Now, as Carl Sagan said, absence of evidence does not mean evidence of absence. So we must remain agnostic, at least on question one. Now, we have been searching the sky for radio signals from other planets for some time now, but nothing's turned up. And some refer to this as Fermi's paradox. And Fermi was Enrico Fermi, an Italian physicist who raised the question back in 1950, if life on other planets is so probable, why do we have no evidence of this life? And I'm going to address this question specifically in question four. But first, let's move on to question two. Does rationality exist elsewhere in the universe? Well, as I said before, we know that we are rational creatures, so rationality exists in the universe. And importantly, it may also be fundamental to the universe, as Hegel explains. Therefore, it may be universal. And if life does develop in the universe, it should also, if opportunity avails itself, continue to develop and continue to evolve to the point where it expresses rationality and intelligence. And this, as I've said, is most likely its goal. Not that it's a goal by some outside force or God. It's just that that's the nature of the life force itself to express itself and better express itself and have greater freedom and control of the environment and awareness of itself, which leads to the expression of rationality. But again, as with life itself, there's no evidence confirming that rationality, intelligence, also exists somewhere outside of Earth. But we can't rule it out either. This brings us to question three. If there is rational life out there, is it possible to communicate with such extraterrestrial consciousness? And the answer here appears to be yes, with some qualifications. We are capable of picking up radio signals from space, and we have monitors going on right now trying to pick up signals from outer space. Many organizations monitor the skies for such signals. Our own radio waves and satellite transmissions extend into space and have for some time now, many of which could be picked up by now by our nearest neighbors. And perhaps the most famous such message was sent out from Earth from the huge Arecibo radio telescope located in Puerto Rico in 1974. It contained numbers, atomic numbers, chemical formulas, a map of the solar system, and other information showing our intelligence. And we aimed it at a star cluster some 25,000 light years from Earth. So our message will arrive 25,000 years from now. This method is obviously slow, real slow, but it may be too slow for real communication. What about physical visits? Well, if you think radio waves are slow, physical travel is so much, much slower. So any kind of meaningful physical travel would have to involve technologies beyond our current understanding and capability. Now, there could be unmanned drones or probes that are sent out by civilizations from other planets. In fact, the United States did that. In 1977, it sent out two vehicles out of our solar system, Voyager 1 and Voyager 2. They contained greetings from Earth messages. They included also a recording of music, which they called Earth's Greatest Hits. It even contained a Chuck Berry rock and roll hit, Johnny Be Good. And as an aside, there's a very funny old Saturday Night Live skit in which Earth receives its first message from outer space. Steve Martin portrays a scientist, and he's going to read to the world the first message from the aliens. And he says it contains just four words, and it's going to be on the cover of Time magazine next week. And he reads the four words, "Send more Chuck Berry." Anyway, I posted a video clip of this Saturday Night Live skit on the podcast Facebook page if you want to check it out. But there's a fourth type of communication beyond radio signals, personal travel, or unmanned spacecraft. That's ESP, extrasensory communication. Well, there is some empirical evidence that ESP does exist, perhaps only in a limited sense among some people, particularly between close relations and friends. It's not yet firmly established as an accepted view of science. But one wonders just how deep does the collective unconscious mind go? Could it go so deep that it includes extraterrestrial life if it exists out there? It's an interesting idea, but it does not seem to be evident in our dreams or archetypes that we express in our religion and our art, following along with Jung's theory. So this question of ESP cannot really be addressed at this point in time. It may be possible, but it may also not be possible. So this brings us to our last question regarding the Fermi paradox. 4, if rational creatures are out there, why have we not heard from them? Well, as I said, the Earth is close to 4 billion years old, with measurable life arising shortly after that. Although conscious rational life only appeared relatively recently, many stars out there have been around a lot longer, perhaps twice as long. Could they have not figured out interstellar travel by now? The Milky Way can be traversed in a few million years given conventional space travel. So why aren't they here, or their probes, or their radio signals, anything? But there's nothing. It's silence. And why is this so? Well, there are many theories, many possibilities. Let me just cover 2 broad ones. First is that technologically intelligent civilizations may have a lifespan of their own and die out before they could establish galactic travel. And there can be many reasons why they die out, but we'll just lump it all in, that they never survive to the point of establishing intergalactic travel. Now, secondly, it's possible that they're out there and they're aware of us, but they choose not to communicate with us. And this is because they see us as not having evolved enough to communicate with. And you can understand this. We are currently a species still engaged with wars against each other. Why would an advanced civilization want to make contact with us? Remember the old line, take me to your leader? We as a planet could not even come to agreement as to who to put forth as our leader. So we may be sort of untouchable at this point in time. And also, the relatively recent spate of UFO sightings, unidentified flying objects, raises this possibility of us being observed but not yet contacted. So it's an interesting theory. But again, backing up a little bit, all this is very technologically oriented, very physically oriented. And as I said before, mind may indeed be universal. And as such, if other creatures evolve on other planets, they may advance to the point where they tap into rational thought as well. So they would not be true aliens, but they would be fellow sentient creatures recognizing thought and spirit as a bond between us. Now, let me bring up an interesting point. It cannot be denied that the universe appears as if it has been fine-tuned for life. And as I said, this does not necessarily imply a creator God behind it all. My own theory is that the laws of nature may have evolved from round to round of the universe, and other scientists feel this may be the case as well. From birth to death to rebirth, there's a cycle, and things get more fine-tuned to produce life. It may have taken a few rounds just to get to the point where there was initial life. Anyway, some of the coincidences that we see, if the electromagnetic force between 2 protons were only slightly smaller, the universe would have been short-lived. If the strong nuclear force was off a bit by, say, 0.02%, the universe itself could not exist. If the ratio of dark energy to gravity were off just a bit, the initial universe would have collapsed. If the cosmological constant were just slightly larger, space would have expanded too rapidly for stars to form. So the universe itself seems to have evolved very much along the lines to support life, and life evolves to the point to support rational thought. I mentioned this theory that I've adopted and I explored it in episode 61. And this may be an evolutionary journey that we share with others. It may not be, planet dependent. And as listeners to the podcast know, Hegel's approach is that evolution of spirit in nature is historical. It is ongoing. And Hegel claimed that history evolves toward greater freedom and rationality dialectically. It's a dialectical process. And this often happens through the struggle of nation against nation. This is still going on today on Earth. And someday, if and when confronted with an alien civilization, we may have to engage dialectically with them for advancement. Let's hope it's a peaceful dialectic process. But assuming that rationality is core to the universe, when we are confronted with other rational beings, they may have evolved past us from an understanding point. They may be more in touch with spirit and incorporated into the lives more than us. Will we be able to grow given such an encounter? Hopefully. Are there things perhaps we can pass on to them given our own unique circumstances? Also, you know, hopefully, possibly. Meeting another civilization with their own dialectical history and then combining it with ours in a dialectical process could be a life-changing experience for us here. So, finally, what do we do about all this? Well, do we just wait and see? No. There are a couple of knowns here that I think we should keep front and center. First, the big one, the sun will not last forever. It will eventually die out. Even if we live together, you know, if we can extend life indefinitely, that's not good enough. The sun will not last forever. It will die. And as part of its process, it will eventually become bigger and engulf the Earth. This will occur in about 5 billion years or so. So we have plenty of time to prepare for this event and possibly leave Earth and the solar system itself. And it may take us a few billion years to become an interstellar species. But there's no time like the present to start things moving along. And there's another danger, that of a giant asteroid hitting the Earth. This is what is commonly believed to have wiped out the non-flying dinosaurs some 65 million years ago. Unfortunately, they didn't have rocket ships to escape the planet. And there's another thing that could happen. A huge random asteroid could strike the Earth. And scientists estimate that this can occur every 500,000 years or so. And this is a much shorter time span than the 5 billion years when the Earth is engulfed by the sun. And just because it's very rare does not prevent it from happening sooner than later. And this is another reason that interplanetary colonization could have a very important life-saving benefit for us and for rationality itself, if we're the only ones that have evolved so far to this point. Otherwise, we might have to wait for the next round to continue our evolution if we're alone or, you know, somebody else on some other planet, some other species will carry on. But it's something that is important to consider seriously, interplanetary travel and setting up colonies on other planets. Then there are the issues here on the planet itself. Things such as nuclear Armageddon and climate change. They represent known risks that could make the Earth uninhabitable. And that's another reason to explore other planets. And there's also the issue of contagious pandemics that could occur, worse than what we've seen so far. And they are certainly possible and can't be ruled out. So all these terrestrial events point the need to take a look for a new homeland, as they say. So, to close things off, let's return once again to philosophy. All this talk about the Big Bang and galaxies makes for a great left-brain analysis. But as Hegel famously said in the Phenomenology of Spirit, everything turns on grasping and expressing the true, not as substance, but equally as subject. And the following, what seems to take place outside of it to be an actively directed against it is its own doing, its own activity. And substance shows that it is in reality subject. So what he's saying here is that mind and matter are essentially the same. They are two sides of the same coin. Both are fundamental. And we can take solace from the fact that mind exists and is indeed fundamental, as are the planets, the suns, and the galaxies. But we shouldn't just rest with that knowledge. We are alive in nature and we must move forward. And for the reasons discussed here, this means moving out to other planets and to other stars. So that's a wrap for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. And a special thanks to all those of you who have braved through all 81 episodes of the Cunning of Geist podcast so far. I will keep them coming. And as I always remind everyone at the end of each episode, please be sure to like and follow the podcast Facebook page, at Cunning of Geist. I post there often, and we have very fruitful conversations with followers of that page. So check it out, like it, and follow it, and contribute. And also, feel free to share links to these episodes on your own social media accounts. I highly encourage it. And also, tell your like-minded friends about the podcast. Spread the word. So, closing, let me say, I'm Gregory Novak. This is The Cunning of Geist. See you next time.